Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Good afternoon, everybody. Hope you're all safe and well. Friday lunchtime can only mean one thing. Window watch here on the Pinker, whichever channel you join us on. Thank you very much. You're very welcome. Connor Southall joined by Dave Freezer. We'll be with you for the next half an hour or so to maybe sort the facts from fiction on Norwich City's transfer window and all the speculation that we've had. Any comments, any questions you've got, do get them in down below. We'll try and get through as many as we can before we depart you this afternoon. It feels like, even though the transfer window's been open for a couple of weeks or so now, it really feels like, Dave, this has been the week that it's really kind of kick-started into gear for Norwich City. Obviously, two signings confirmed, a few other things bubbling around in the background. It feels like it's really kind of woken up to an extent.
Yeah, thankfully. I think there's plenty of Norwich fans who were pretty eager for that, just to get that first one over the line. I know it's a case of timing. There is still over two months left of the transfer window. The players aren't even back for pre-season yet. So maybe that anxiety isn't across the board and probably isn't with plenty of Norwich fans who were probably pretty relaxed and knew that Stuart Webber would be on top of the situation. But just to swing in like a wrecking ball, as Miley Cyrus said, with that big signing of Milo Rashica, which was very unexpected, hadn't been sort of leaked or reported anywhere. Sounds like it's about 8 million initially, rising to above club record fees if all the add-ons and stuff follow through. And there's a lot of excitement about it. This is a proven Bundesliga player. This isn't somebody who we're going to have to wait and see what they're going to be capable of. We know what he's capable of. It's whether he can produce it with Norwich under a Daniel Farke style in the Premier League. And I think generally the vibe is that he looks like a good fit.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've got plenty more videos on our YouTube channel and content on pinkin.com as well over Rashica and people like Nick Ames from The Guardian, Dan O'Hagan, giving their expert insight into that signing. But like Dave says, all the noises at the minute seems to be positive. I can see a lot of questions flooding in already, and they tend to surround one man. So we'll start with him. That's Celtic's Christopher Ayer, which is someone that Norwich have kind of been interested in for a while. It was all sort of fairly positive, wasn't it, earlier this week, the noises we were hearing. And then, I mean, you mentioned a wrecking ball there. Pad threw one in this morning. Norwich have called their interest in him. Just talk to us a little bit about that, Dave, and maybe our understanding for why that is the case for people who maybe haven't read Paddy's bit yet.
Yeah, I don't think there was a hashtag no circus involved, was there? That way it didn't quite reach those sort of levels. That was the club have just announced Lotus, haven't they, as being the front of shirt sponsors. That was the only thing their little mock WhatsApp group was missing, was Paddy popping in at the bottom saying hashtag no circus. That would have just finished it off nicely. But yeah, I mean, as we reported earlier in the week, really, and as we've said a lot of times, Norwich are looking for almost their niche of where they can fit in and get players that maybe some people would think they can't afford. And earlier in the week, last week, we were hearing that Red Bull Leipzig and Bayer Leverkusen are interested. You know, if Leipzig in particular, they've just swelled their coffers by selling their two best centre-backs, Upamecano to Bayern Munich and Konate to Liverpool. A lot of money. They already have a lot of money. They're a Champions League team. If they want Christopher Ayer ahead of Norwich, they will get him. That's pretty certain. The same as probably just picking it out of the air. If West Ham want Adam Armstrong ahead of Norwich, and that Armstrong deal never comes into the sort of ballpark where Norwich can afford him, it's not going to happen. West Ham will be able to pay him big wages, a lot higher wages than Norwich will. So there is going to be a need for that degree of patience. And as the phrase I've used a few times is that they are having to cast the net far and wide all across Europe and potentially beyond to look for these opportunities. And that's exactly what Rashica represents, isn't it? He's just been relegated. He had a year left on his contract. He'd just gone off the boil a little bit, but had shown that he could be a real exciting Bundesliga player in the past. Norwich have nipped in there at the right time, as you said in our video with Dan O'Hagan, Stuart Webber nipping in at the back post with the perfectly timed run sort of thing. So it's the same with Ayer. From what we hear, it's not dead in the water yet. if he doesn't end up going to Leipzig or Leverkusen or whoever else, then Norwich will still be in the hunt and would still like him. But from how it sounds, it looks more likely that those are the sort of teams that he's going to end up with. He is a Norway international. He has won a lot of honours with Celtic, so he's a good age. He can get a good contract at this stage. It sounds like Norwich aren't the front runners and subsequently are, as they already were. They obviously have long lists. They have to cast their net far and wide at the moment. And if Ayer doesn't work out, they will have other names available to them. And we've already heard two of them linked, haven't we? Tosin Adarabayo at Fulham and Sebastian Bornau at Cologne, who we think they like the look of as well. So, yeah, I think Stuart Webber will be fully aware of that. And Norwich fans have got to take that on board, that these things probably will happen now and again. They've happened plenty of times before. They'll happen again. And sometimes you need patience in the transfer market, particularly as a self-funded club.
And in Stuart Webber, they have someone who won't hang about. If there's a deal that's not happening or there's a player who maybe can't be sold, then he will, I don't want to say stick two fingers up literally, but in terms of that phrase, he will move on, won't he, fairly quickly. And there will be other names, and you mentioned two there, that Norwich have sort of bubbling underneath nicely. And this is the thing, isn't it? When you are a club that looks for opportunities in the market, sometimes you won't be, particularly given Brexit and all the other sort of strands to this current market, which is making it difficult. Sometimes you won't be the only club to arrive at a certain player. And sometimes the clubs that also arrive maybe have bigger financials involved, geographically are closer to where a player is from. There are lots of elements, aren't there, that can maybe mean that players look away from Norwich. And I guess what Norwich have at the moment is that Premier League factor and the fact that a lot of players abroad or in Scotland, wherever, do want to play in the Premier League. And that is a big selling point. But equally, you mentioned there, I mean, those clubs you mentioned about, European football is a big thing, isn't it? There's stability in their division as well. So, yeah, not dead in the water, as you say, but that's the thing with looking for opportunities in the market. Sometimes other people can spot them as well.
Yeah, and you could say that this is the club being proactive, couldn't you? You know, this is only from, you know, the whispers and stuff that we've heard from around the club, is that they have now realised that Ayer is probably unlikely, and now they're looking at their other options. So they'll keep an eye on Ayer without that getting too much of a tongue twister. But if they are getting the sense that maybe he's holding out for a bigger move, then they are sensible to move on, aren't they, and start looking at their other options and perhaps players who do see Norwich as the right step for them.
Absolutely. And if you've got any more questions on Christopher Ayer, I think we've probably summed up why maybe that interest has cooled a little bit. But any additional questions, then let us know and we'll strive to answer them. And then I guess the other one that we kind of reported this week, this one did get a no circus from Paddy, was Billy Gilmour, young midfielder from Chelsea, Scotland international, really impressed, didn't he, in the Euros with that performance against England. Subsequently, he's tested positive for COVID, currently in self-isolation. But by all accounts, this one sounds like a goer.
It does, and it's got Norwich fans pretty excited, isn't it? I think there needs to be a degree of tempering expectations for if we get down the road and they do get the deal, which clearly they do. And I'm sure they're not the only ones that want Billy Gilmour at the moment. His performance against England last Friday at the Euros at such a young age was very impressive. And he looks like he could be quite a similar vibe to Kenny McLean to me. It's a similar type of player, more of a McLean than a out-and-out defensive midfielder like Skip, perhaps. Would Norwich, if they can get Skip back, pair Gilmour and Skip, such inexperience in central midfield in the Premier League? That seems unlikely to me, but you never know. But for somebody, there's a really good signing there. And immediately when Thomas Tuchel arrived at Chelsea, immediately everyone was thinking, can Daniel Farke use that relationship to get in some of their players? Because we all know Chelsea normally have about 500 players out on loan, don't they? And, you know, just look at the relegation zone this season. Conor Gallagher went down with West Brom. Ethan Ampadu went down with Sheffield United. They have, and they don't just have young players out on loan either, do they? They develop players into their mid-20s and things like that. They have, because they've got so much money, frankly. So, Gilmour, clearly one they want. Clearly there's going to be competition. The Graeme Souness comments have sort of wound Norwich fans up a little bit as well, haven't they? Him saying that he should look at Foden and how he stayed at Man City and was groomed by Pep Guardiola to become this top player. And to be, you know, Guardiola got some criticism along the way as well, didn't he, for not playing him enough. But, you know, trusting Guardiola, he knows what he's doing. Look at him now. He's on his way to being a real top player, the way it looks. So we shall see. Norwich can offer up Skip as an example, can't they? They can say, look what we've done for his career. We can do the same for Billy in the Premier League this season. And he looks like someone who could be a real asset for Norwich as well. But it sounds like things are well along. It sounds like Norwich are pretty hopeful it's going to happen. He's certainly one of their main midfield targets, but his Euros pro, or the Euros has boosted his profile quite a lot, and you just got to be a little bit worried about whether anyone comes in. But no one else has got that trump card of Daniel Farke, have they? And playing the attacking style, which the top teams like, as we saw in the Premier League two seasons ago, Norwich tended to look more comfortable against those top sides, didn't they? Because they were trying to play the same sort of football. They weren't going down the Burnley or the Palace route or whatever. So, yeah, for me, that's the trump card. And hopefully they will be able to get that one over the line, and it will be a real significant addition and an important one as well, because central midfield, you've got to be honest, if you look at it on paper today, looks a little bit worrying, doesn't it?
Yeah, it absolutely does. And there are two interesting elements that you mentioned there. First of which being his performance against England, which, of course, you perform on a stage like the Euros, then suddenly I would imagine the phone lights up a little bit with Premier League clubs. There certainly seems to be other interest from Premier League clubs. I know Wolves have been mentioned. I would imagine there's a fair few others as well. Like you say, Norwich down the track, and maybe the advantage that they have is that the head coaches of those respective clubs won't have a direct line to Thomas Tuchel in the same way that maybe Daniel Farke does. And then the second element is this sort of coronavirus diagnosis that is maybe now created a bit of time that maybe Norwich City didn't need, because that has generated a little bit of time where other clubs could maybe offer their proposals and state their plans when maybe Norwich could have pressed ahead and got this deal done without it. So that ends, I believe, on Wednesday. So if everything works in the way it could, then this could be something that progresses very quickly towards the back end of next week. But as you mentioned, Dave, it does seem that there's a little bit of nervousness around maybe something else arriving, I guess similar to maybe Aya, something else coming up, something else happening that maybe derails this a little bit, a club coming from nowhere that, and this sort of time period has allowed that to happen. But as things stand, as you mentioned, everything looks fairly positive for him. In terms of
mentioning that he was injured as well, wasn't he? That he made that breakthrough with Chelsea, and then he had a serious knee injury, was out for quite a while, and they were only really easing him back into things. So that might actually sort of play into the hands of a loan deal being his next best move, which would be probably that key difference between the Foden situation, wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And worth stating as well, not a done deal. I don't think we've ever said it's a done deal, but certainly one that is progressing nicely in the background, and Norwich remain hopeful. So it's going to be interesting to see how that one progresses next week. In terms of what that means for Norwich's pursuit of Skip, and maybe I'll throw Matty Longstaff in there as well, who's been another Premier League youngish midfielder that they've been linked with this week via the Chronicle up in the North East, Newcastle United midfielder. They're only allowed two Premier League loans, aren't they? So if they did get Gilmore over the line, that would probably mean that sort of spare space is left open for Ollie Skip, I would imagine.
Yeah, I don't see Matty Longstaff. That doesn't quite tally for me. He scored a brilliant goal in his debut, didn't he, against Man United? Or I think it was one of his early games anyway for Newcastle. Mm. But always looked pretty lightweight, to be honest, and you know, a trier, but from what I'd seen of him, maybe during difficult times at Newcastle, he didn't really seem to be setting the world alight, and faded away from things, really, didn't he? So I think you take Gilmore ahead of him. He would probably be your plan B to Gilmore, potentially, if that wasn't to come off. But yeah, as I said, with Gilmore, I don't think he's the same player as Skip anyway, is he? And even with Skip, you know, he's brilliant last year, but we know the step up is huge. And we all think he'd be good enough for the Premier League at this stage. But I think you'd need another defensive midfielder. Whether they feel that is Jacob Sorensen, we'll see. From what we saw of him in central midfield in the limited bursts last season, I didn't think he actually looked that defensive. He looked more like an all-round sort of box-to-box central midfielder. So I just wonder whether you need the Tete replacement in there as well. Not a 34-year-old, but maybe a 26, 27-year-old, someone with proper experience, maybe someone you've got to spend a bit of money on, who can really bring that ballast and that experience to your midfield. I think certainly if it's Gilmore and Skip, then all right, you're in a good position. But I think you're going to want to add some experience into there, because you've got, what, McLean, Rupp and Sorensen. But beyond that, there's not really any recognised senior central midfielders. And you know, we saw that how that evolved under Daniel last year, how he sort of found that double pivot that finally worked in terms of having the balance. We saw it sometimes maybe with Leitner and Tete, Vrančić and Tete maybe at points. But the balance between McLean and Skip in terms of being a defensive shield, but still being able to contribute in terms of the passing going forward, that was the best balance I think we've seen. In front of a great balance as well in Gibson and Hanley. So that's one that has got to improve. Across the board, obviously, they have to improve in every single position if they're going to survive in the Premier League this season. So it's going to be really interesting to see how that central midfield area develops in the next sort of month or so.
Absolutely. And a lot has been made about Gilmore's height as well. I think 5'5", and he's a bit of an enforcer, does like a challenge. I guess maybe similar, you put him in the Harrison Reed kind of camp style of player, potentially. But again, bearing in mind Norwich, and we've heard that from sort of Weber himself, talk about physicality and a need for, not necessarily physicality as being big and tall and strong, but different sorts of physicality in terms of sprints and stuff like that. And I guess Gilmore ticks the box from a different perspective. It does feel, as he sort of listed the midfield options there, that Norwich lack a real kind of enforcer. For some reason, I mentioned this to someone I was speaking to yesterday. I always think about kind of Kouyaté when he was at West Ham and obviously now at Palace. Is this someone who's just quite big and physical? I guess maybe what Ibrahim Amadou was supposed to be. That kind of feels like the hole that they're kind of missing in that midfield at the moment. I don't know kind of your thoughts on that.
Yeah, that's a good shout. And there was that Arsenal game, wasn't there, where Amadou looked awesome apart from some atrocious shooting and made that heroic block late in the game. And then I think it was the Southampton away game that followed that and he had a dreadful game. So he was one who clearly you always have to give the context that his move was totally thrown out of whack by him having to convert back into a centre-back almost immediately and spend a lot of time there in the Premier League. And that's not why he joined. So if that hadn't happened, maybe things have been different and they would have been able to get him in from the start and he would have been able to build. But by that point, it seemed like he hadn't settled. I don't think he spoke particularly good English. And when it came around to January, it seemed that both parties were happy to go their separate ways. And he went to Leganés, I think, wasn't it, in Spain and finished the season with them. I think he got relegated as well from Spain and is now back with Sevilla, I guess. So, that's possibly the sort of signing. I don't think he's going to come back, is he? Because that one didn't work out. But in terms of the physicality, he certainly had it, didn't he? He looked like the sort of Premier League unit that you see who have been so successful in the Premier League. And yeah, they definitely will need that muscle in the middle. And that is something they're going to miss from Alex Tetti having left. But that isn't Billy Gilmore. Skip. Yeah, he does do that, doesn't he? But he's not big and strong. So I do think you need that separate option. Rupp and McLean as well. They're not that sort of player, are they? So, yeah, a bit of muscle seems like probably a decent priority to add into that midfield mix.
Absolutely. And just to be absolutely clear, I'm not advocating that Norwich re-sign Ibrahim Amadou or sign Kouyaté either, but just someone of that ilk, someone in that mold. I'm sure people will know the type of midfielder that I'm kind of thinking about. It's been a busy week for links, as it always seems to be. So let's start, I guess, with the other midfield option that maybe is on the list, which we had this morning, Nias, who's at Lille. This was one that you worked up. So speak to us a little bit about this one and maybe why it isn't an option for Norwich City at this stage.
Yeah, this is a bit of an odd one. You occasionally get agents popping up. This was apparently a lawyer, one of his representatives, basically. But it's a regional newspaper in France who cover Lille. And basically, they've got some quotes from him saying that they want to know what's going on with his future because they had assurances last year. He's only 21, Senegalese, defensive midfielder, then didn't play for Lille, who ended up winning the French title, so that's probably why. And then in January he went out on loan to Panathinaikos. We know Norwich keep an eye on Greece. They signed Yiannoulis, of course, in January and played regularly for them. So he's at the point of his career where they want him to kick on. Now he either wants to be playing regularly for Lyon next year or he wants to move on. And basically his representative was saying we need some stability here. They haven't got a manager at the moment and they had new owners come in mid-season. So basically, he was saying, look, if you're not going to use him this season, then we've got interest from, as he claimed, Norwich, Servette, Club Bruges, Angers in France. So top flight clubs all interested, as he claimed. But from what we hear, you know, he might be a player that Norwich have looked at, they've scouted at, and maybe spotted in Greece and are going to keep an eye on how his career develops. But it doesn't sound like they are actively pursuing that, or it's one that they are looking to get over the line or anything like that at the moment. You know, maybe somewhere down the line. But of course, they signed Melvin City, didn't they, from the French second tier, which was January 2020. He was playing regularly for Sochaux, and that's not worked out at all, has it? He went out on loan and, okay, it was injury affected. And then I think he had to self-isolate for COVID for a bit as well, didn't he? And that didn't work out. They brought him back. So as things are set up, he might be needed in pre-season as a defensive midfielder until somebody, maybe Skip, comes back, hopefully Skip eventually, just because they haven't really got any numbers. But his career is really not got going in England, as he's kind of become the forgotten man, and he is a defensive midfielder. So yeah, I don't think that's a name we need to be worrying too much about. Cech Nias at Lille.
Yeah, there you go. You can cross that one off your list if you've made one. France is an interesting market anyway at the moment, isn't it? Because of obviously the financial difficulties in there. It's one we know Norwich are actively monitoring, as they do with a lot of markets across Europe. I think it's in many ways, as difficult as the window is at the moment, it's maybe there's a lot of good opportunities in there at the minute for Norwich City, which is probably why you're seeing them get a link to a lot of players, because no doubt they will have looked at a lot of them. One of those isn't, as I think most Norwich fans would expect, Martin Braithwaite from Barcelona. However, I think that Norwich were chucked in a report with a few other clubs, a Barcelona-based newspaper this came from, didn't it? But I think when you get into sort of break it down and look at the pure numbers of it, and maybe his wage demands, particularly at Barcelona at the moment, this is one that we can write off as a complete non-starter.
Yeah, it just doesn't fit the Norwich sort of profile at all, does it? I mean, to be perfectly honest, he's had quite a strange career, isn't he? You know, Middlesbrough for £9 million, that didn't work out, fell out with Tony Pulis, went back to France on loan, played with Gibson in his first season and Jordan Hugo in his second season when he was at Borough, so they'll know a bit about him, but didn't really score goals for Borough. Then he's gone to, I think that was Leganés as well, wasn't it, in Spain? And this strange situation emerged where Barcelona were given special dispensation to sign a forward because they basically didn't have any fit, and Dembele had got a serious injury, which is strange. I don't think that would be allowed in England. And he had a release clause, which they activated, about 16 million. And then basically they've sat him on the bench for the last, 18 months or so. And he's scored, I think, 8 goals in 50-odd games for Barcelona. So, and he's a Denmark international. The Euros, he's playing on the wing, oddly. But, you know, he's 30. He's not had the most convincing of careers. He'll be on big wages. The report said that they are looking to recover as much of that 16 million as they can, and just doesn't seem to quite fit the mould. I mean, is he an upgrade on Jordan Hugo, even though he's at Barcelona? I mean, I wouldn't say greatly. You know, I know he's got that flexibility, but when you talk about the value that is coming with it, A, it doesn't really seem conceivable for Norwich at the moment, and B, I don't think they really need him. Certainly in terms of priorities at the moment, centre-back and central midfield are far more pressing than signing a player like Martin Braithwaite, isn't it? So, it immediately didn't seem like a goer to us, and from what we hear, not something that Norwich are remotely interested in.
Yeah, there you go. So that's another one. We might as well continue just to strike them off before we get to your guys' questions and comments, so do keep them coming in. Santiago Moreno, which is one I think Footballer Insider has said today, another one we can strike off the list purely. And I think we've spoken about this before in other ones that we've done. South America, while being a market that is open because obviously the Brexit regulations that came into force in January, that's almost been instantly closed because of the COVID regulations. And so Norwich's recruitment team physically can't get out there to look at players at the moment. That's before you get into the difficulties in terms of third party ownership and obviously the tests of character and stuff they want to do, which will obviously be difficult as well. They've done a lot of work in Brazil and Argentina. I think this Santiago Moreno's a Colombian based player, I believe. So in and around that market, and probably will be a lot of value for Norwich in that market in the future when travel restrictions are eased significantly and they can get out there. But I think it's fair to say at the moment, any kind of South American player, particularly for this window, can maybe discount on the basis that Norwich City aren't going to invest a significant sum of money into a player that they physically can't get out to go and watch, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it doesn't mean they're not monitoring things, but just almost fair play to them. I'm sure there are plenty of clubs, plenty of managers, sporting directors, whatever, who have signed players on the basis of DVDs. And that's not how Norwich do business. They like to actually get out there to speak to people around the club, get a vibe for what the personality is like, what the people around the player are like, really, you know, do the full job. And for a player to come from the South American League and step straight into the Premier League isn't common for a start. This is a young lad. He's playing for America de Cali, who I don't really know anything about, but Colombia, in terms of the Brexit regulations, the Colombian League is ranked as band 4 in terms of when you're picking up the points. And the Brazilian and Argentine leagues are band 2. So they'd be the equivalent to the championship. So it gets pretty complicated. But the fact that he plays in the Copa Libertadores for them as well means that he probably would get a work permit. But anyway, Football Insider is saying that Rangers are thinking they're going to get him for about $3 million, but that Norwich, one of the clubs rivaling as well. But as you've just teed up there, as far as we understand it, Norwich aren't pursuing anyone from South America at the moment. And this lad in particular, who's a young winger, I think he's 21, apparently building himself a good reputation, but not one that Norwich are going after at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Brazil and Argentina, as we mentioned, a lot of work been done into those. But I think just the logistics of signing someone from South America at this present time with the COVID restrictions is very, very difficult. So, as I say, the door that's been opened, but one that they probably find closed again for reasons out of their control. Stephen Bergwijs from PSV, this is the next one we had, and we are sort of 29-year-old winger, $4 million was a release clause was quoted by PA. I think this was a couple of weeks ago now, wasn't it? And it is one that Norwich were aware of, were potentially interested in, but ultimately one that didn't get done. We've obviously seen Rashita arrive through the door. So again, another one that we can strike off the list. But this one, perhaps unlike the others, was definitely a player that Norwich City were interested in at one stage.
Yeah, and again, as we said earlier, they are looking and monitoring a lot of players. So that's possibly why we've seen so many. You know, it is now over 50 players they've been linked with since promotion. So which all started with Christopher Ayo, which was like 2 days after the Bournemouth game. I think that's when it all really ramped up, wasn't it? So this always happens with newly promoted clubs to the Premier League, that they're sort of an easy target for agents to drop in and for, you know, transfer websites and tabloid newspapers and stuff. It's easy to just chuck Norwich into the list of clubs, isn't it? And that's probably partly why we've seen them link with so many. But equally, it's because Norwich will have been doing a lot of scouting, again, using that phrase, casting their net far and wide. So in some countries, that stuff comes out quite quickly, doesn't it? Oh, there's a Norwich scout from here. They're having a look at this player. They tell the local paper and bang, you've got a story which does the rounds on the internet and ends up being picked up back in Norfolk eventually by us if it's a story that's worthwhile telling. So, we'll have to sort of leave that one, but they will have been interested in him. I think he had a year on his contract as well, didn't he, Berghaus? He's been in action at the Euros for Holland. I think he made his first appearance off the bench the other day. And he's a good level player, sort of similar to Rashica, really, isn't he, in what he's achieved, but a bit older. I think he's 29. But we've seen some quotes last few days, basically from him saying that he's looking to step up from Feyenoord to a club who's playing Champions League football, and Ajax are being linked quite strongly with him now. So again, a bit like we said with Aya earlier, with Red Bull Leipzig, if a club like Ajax comes in as competition for Norwich, it's pretty likely they're going to win that race. Okay, financially, they might not be wealthier than Norwich because the Premier League obviously has all that money. But it's Ajax. It's a massive club. Not that long ago, they were in the Champions League final, were they? And they will be able to offer Champions League football and silverware. It's just probably a big thing for a guy who's been playing at Feyenoord. So, you know, that shows. I think most people, when that name popped up, were like, well, that looks like a really good signing potentially. So, you know, Norwich were heading down the right road, particularly with a €4 million release clause. He would have been potentially a great signing, but just maybe one that they were perhaps a little bit too ambitious with. But there's nothing wrong with that. Because if they come off, like with Rashica, then you can strike gold, hopefully.
I think you've got my Dutch clubs mixed up though. So PSV, I've even got Feyenoord written down in front of me, so no idea where they came from, but there you go. I think you're right in terms of the ambition point, and so it's almost a word that Norwich fans like to throw at the club, isn't it, as a stick to beat them with sometimes, easily, which again, whether you agree with that or don't, but in terms of the profile and caliber of players they approach, I think you're right. When you look at Yanulis and Rashica, the players they have pulled off, that maybe if you're looking from afar, you could say in terms of the clubs they're at and reputation, that actually they've maybe pulled off a bit of a coup. So it's an interesting one, because if you don't aim high, then ultimately you never get those players in the end. But it can mean that often you leave yourself open to an IA situation, or the situation we spoke about there, where other clubs come in that are maybe more attractive. So it's part of the strategy, I guess, and maybe a detracting element of it. But you have to, I guess, credit Norwich for approaching these players and looking to get those deals done. Just finally, in terms of deals that we can strike off, this one has been kind of on and off all summer. As you mentioned, it's been one of those. Jaden Bogle, I think, is gathered a bit of pace again. It was in that PA report we mentioned. I think Sky have repeated it. Also, the local paper covering Sheffield United, where he's currently playing, have repeated this as well. As far as we're concerned, he isn't a player that Norwich City are pursuing at this point. I think it's fairly obvious to see the links. And as you mentioned, we speak about agents quite a lot. Norwich City are an attractive club for a player to be linked with, because they improve young players. I think they've got a reputation throughout football of being quite smart in terms of the way they do their recruitment. So if you're a different club and you see Norwich getting linked to a player, then you might think, okay, well, they've got their head switched on. We'll just kind of follow along. So they're an attractive club to be linked with. And I think maybe that's what we've seen this summer, Dave. I think that's fair to see. A lot of agents linking clubs with Norwich because of maybe the reputation of their recruitment and their development of young players specifically.
Yeah, there was a nice line from Nick Ames when he was speaking to Paddy, wasn't he, in the video about Rashica and about his sort of Kosovan roots and that backstory. And I think Nick's an Ipswich fan, isn't he? If I'm not wrong. Yeah. But he spoke very highly and said that the scouts and Stuart Webber, obviously in particular, are a lot more switched on than a lot of staff at other clubs. So what you just said there probably flows in that some clubs probably do just keep an eye on who Norwich are going for, and maybe Brentford as well. You know, some of these clubs who are really hot on the data and the scouting and stuff. But anyway, yeah, Bogle, I mean, this is a nice and simple one really, isn't it? Because Max Aarons is Norwich City's right back. And unless he's leaving, there's no way Jaden Bogle is coming in. And probably is no, unless Sam Byram's recovery doesn't go to plan, then you've already got Barley Mumba there. As far as we are aware, they're not looking for another right back. So if Max were to go, maybe that's one that they'd look at again. He was an England youth international, but frankly, there's a couple of links from Sheffield United, which are obvious, but they had such a bad season that I wouldn't really be keen to go after any Sheffield United players at the moment, because I'd feel like they would bring a bit of negativity into the camp quite quickly, potentially. You know, maybe initially they'd be fine, but if they then find that Norwich, that they're in a sort of survival scrap again with Norwich, which we're all hoping they can sort of at least stay clear of, but odds are that Norwich are going to be battling down in that bottom sector of the division, aren't they? Is somebody going to have that hunger and that mental strength to go from what Sheffield United had just been through to then into another relegation battle? For me, that I wouldn't want to be sort of taking any of that negativity potentially into the squad at all. So unless you really rated him, and I don't think Bogle particularly tore up any trees for Sheffield United, did he? And I don't think he really did for Derby either. He kind of built a reputation on his potentials. From what I've seen of him, he looks okay. You know, he's good going forward, but he looked more of a championship standard player to me. So, and he, the British premium as well, he would probably cost a fair bit for the player that he is. So as things stand, it's a pretty easy one to not worry about.
Yeah, absolutely is. And I think you're right there in terms of everything that you say. It's going to be really interesting, I think, to see what happens with Max and what Norwich do, and whether any interest does pop up as it has done in the last two windows. And
hello, it is Ryan. And I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Yeah, that's going to be really interesting. Good afternoon to the folks that have commented there. One from Finland, which is nice to see. We're branching out into Europe. We've had a question from Carl on Facebook who said fantastic news on the new sponsor Lotus. How does Rashita compare to Emi Buendia? We won't discuss this now, Carl, because we actually spoke to Dan O'Hagan, who is a Bundesliga commentator, someone who knows far more about German football than certainly myself. I can't speak for Dave, but it's well worth checking out his view. So you can go over to our YouTube page. I think it's probably on our Facebook page as well, if you scroll down and find that, and you can get kind of a detailed look at Rashita and what sort of player he is. Matt Gregory, interestingly, says, away from Norwich, looks like Emi will have an even bigger role at Villa now. Jack Grealish is reportedly joining Manchester City for 100 million, although lots of contrasting reports about that at the moment. Another one on YouTube from I'm the Dude, which is a great name. They said, do you think Norwich will do what they did with Rashita and just announce more signings out of the blue? I think it's fair to say the Rashita element, and we had it with Pookie, didn't we, a few seasons ago. I remember you telling that tale of you guys all being at Paddy's wedding when that one broke. Sometimes signings just pop out of the blue, but it tends to be very rare, doesn't it, in terms of for a signing not to reach us or somebody or someone in the country, maybe where a player is joining. It's an incredibly rare occurrence. So it will be interesting to see if there's any more, but certainly from our understanding, it doesn't seem like at the minute that there's anything imminent in terms of incomings and or outgoings, I suppose, as well.
Yeah, we could probably say today we don't think they're going to be signing anyone, but that's easy after they've signed three in the last 3 days, isn't it? But Kieran Dowell's one that springs to mind as well. There was no speculation with Dowell, was there? So that's always the aim from the club, obviously. They don't want it leaking out, do they? They want to keep these things to themselves and then generate that positivity that Rashica did immediately on Tuesday. But the way that the football industry works, that's not always possible. I mean, Amadou, we mentioned him earlier. You remember all that fuss with, I can't even remember how it unfolded, but it had broken.
They were tracking a plane, weren't they? Some Norwich fans, is that right?
Yeah, people were tracking the flight on apps and stuff, weren't they, of where he was. And he was over France and, you know, he's on his way to Norfolk. And until that, we actually got wind that was definitely happening, we were still wondering if it was just a load of rubbish and Norwich fans have been tracking the wrong plane, but they weren't. They were spot on, and that seemed to have come from the Spanish end. So, the different cultures in different countries in terms of football become quite evident sometimes. You know, we see how many rumours have we seen from Turkey over the years? And as soon as it's come from one of those sort of quite obscure Turkish websites, you're a bit skeptical straight away, because they seem to just write whatever they want, don't they? And there doesn't necessarily need to be much truth behind it, or any truth at all. Yeah. And even Italy can be quite voracious in terms of their transfer tittle tattle, if you want to put it like that. Whereas I think in this country you don't tend to get stuff that's come out of nowhere too much, maybe online, but in terms of the national newspapers, I know I won't list them, but they're not universally popular for various different reasons, and I probably agree with lots of them. But the sports desks at these big papers tend to be different entities, and they are very well connected and well resourced, and they tend to, if they've got a rumour, they tend to have some substance to it. So whereas in other countries, it seems, you know, you only need one mention of a name and you're off, and there's 10 different websites saying that this is definitely happening. What was the one, was it last summer or two summers ago, with Besiktas and Pookie, and I think it was Besiktas, wasn't it? And they were just flooding his Instagram on like every single post he'd ever written. It just had come to Besiktas and stuff. So that's how the club would prefer it to be. That's how all clubs would probably prefer it to be. But ultimately, that's just not realistic a lot of the time.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that sums up probably why a lot of stuff does get out there as well a lot of the time, because of how people, how well-resourced people are, particularly from elsewhere. So it's always interesting, I think, when one slips under the radar.
And agents as well, of course. Agents purposefully fan those flames a lot of the time, don't they?
Yeah, of course they do. As we spoke about in terms of Norwich being an attractive club, it's kind of why you have to take things with a lot of a pinch of salt at times. Joe Hinchcliffe has asked on YouTube, this is an interesting question, one player from the Euros that you'd like to see in Norwich's starting 11. I guess he means realistic, because he's gone and say no Ronaldo's and Mbappe and etc. So I think we're maybe planning to do something around this at some point, Dave, so maybe we won't show our hand completely, but is there one player in particular that you've enjoyed watching so far at the Euros that you think be all right if Norwich could take a look at them?
The one that springs to mind, I nearly tweeted something about this the other day, but I didn't bother in the end, is Glenn Kamara with Finland, who I'm just surprised has not been linked with Norwich because of the Pukki link, and you'd think that Pukki could tap him up a little bit almost, but I think maybe that's an indication of the fact that Kamara is probably looking at higher level clubs than Norwich now. He's been really good for Rangers. He's playing for Steven Gerrard, which for any midfielder is quite a thing, isn't it? To be playing for one of the best midfielders ever from this country, certainly, and probably up there with the best midfielders in European football ever, and certainly most successful anyway. He's going to be probably playing Champions League football with Rangers next year, although I think they have to qualify still, don't they? But at least it'll be Europa League. He's won a title. He's playing for a massive club. Norwich would have to make that deal seriously worth it for him, a bit like they did with Gary Hooper with Celtic back in, 2013? I'm not sure he's necessarily attainable, but given what we were talking about earlier, in terms of a central midfielder and a defensive central midfielder as well, I think he'd be a great addition to the Norwich team because his possession stats are excellent as well. I think he'd really fit into Farker's team. He might be an expensive signing for Norwich, but attainable if he was interested. It just, I keep coming back to him and trying to persuade myself that it might be possible, but it seems unlikely to me, unless maybe they did really flood the coffers because Cantwell and Aarons both got big money moves, and that's probably seeming unlikely now that at least one of them will still be around, you would have thought. So yeah, unless they've got loads of money to spend, I can't see him being a realistic option. But when you actually just sat there watching the games without doing some proper scouting, it's and looking at how old people are and their experience and their contract status and stuff like that, it's there's a reason why people get paid a lot of money to do those things with football clubs.
Yeah, there definitely is. And I'll give an example of what you said there. I was watching Denmark play, and I saw one of their players, a nice winger. I think I've mentioned this to you before, Dave, Mikael Damsgaard. And I thought, oh, he looks tidy. I have a little look at him. So he's 20 years old, playing at Sampdoria. And I've just Googled his name again to make sure I got the club right, where he's at. And immediately it flashes up with Leeds being linked with 40 million quid. So then immediately you sort of step back and go, yeah, that's probably unattainable for Norwich. But he's been a really enjoyable player. But Joe, if you don't mind, we'll just keep our cards sort of close to our chest on that one, because we may end up doing something around that sort of subject, which of course you'll be able to see on pinken.com.
What I think is interesting is that Norwich have gone and signed someone from a country who aren't at the Euros. They've gone and signed one, basically Kosovo's best player, or certainly one of Kosovo's best players. So maybe, again, as we've talked about so many times, as Farker and Weber both said, they need to be creative. They need to find the sort of hidden gems. They've gone where people aren't looking at the moment. They look, you know, Aya is another example. Norway aren't at the Euros, are they? Maybe those are the guys who are a bit off the radar, the bigger clubs who are monitoring the Euros closely. Norwich probably, of course, will be monitoring it and scouting it thoroughly, but Norwich will probably look at the Euros as being a market that isn't necessarily where they're going to get the value they're looking for. So, I think that's an interesting element to it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And as we said earlier, you perform at the Euros and suddenly you enter a different sphere in terms of clubs that are interested and whatnot. And in many ways, like you said there, it's kind of, it's easy recruitment, isn't it? Watch the Euros, pick the best player, sign him. I mean, that's kind of not really the way Norwich City do it, because as soon as you enter, let's take the Danish lad that I spoke about there, for example. Suddenly he'll have six or seven clubs interested in him without doubt this summer because of what he's done.
Great goal.
Exactly. And that just goes to show kind of the power of the Euros as well, I suppose. I'm just looking through our comments to see if we've got anything else. A few names that we've spoken about in the past that are coming up again, one of which is from, I saw on Twitter, so I'll mention this one now, from the North Macedonian Canaries, which I'm pretty sure is certainly not a fan group that I've heard of before. But thank them for their tweet to us. I did make a note of this. They said, any update with Ozan Tufan at Fenerbahce as a potential target? You reported this a couple of months ago, if I remember correctly. Certainly one that was linked. He was in that kind of bubble of players that you mentioned that was kind of linked after their promotion, wasn't it? And haven't really heard anything subsequently from sort of the noises we hear. Not one that Norwich City are interested with. Kind of falls in the category that we spoke about earlier about Turkish transfer rumours and that sphere, doesn't it, where things can pop up often lacking substance. And I think he's been linked with Liverpool and Palace and other teams as well. And not been too impressed with him at the Euros either from what I've seen. But then Turkey haven't particularly been that impressive. So, yeah, I think that's one you can sort of strike off your list. Joe Drury on Facebook has said, will Jordan Hugill get a chance this season? Dave, what's kind of your thinking around Jordan Hugill? Obviously, understudy for large parts of last season. Timu Pukki clearly is Daniel Farke's preferred choice. I think he could probably have a plethora of strikers in the club and he'd probably still pluck out Timu Pukki as the one he wants to play for Norwich. And some interesting sort of, it was interesting performances from Timu Pukki at the Euros for lots of reasons. Just talk to us a little bit about Jordan Hugill and kind of your thoughts around him this season coming up.
Yeah, I think Hugill's an interesting one because you think about all the praise he got from Farker and the players for being such a great team player, a bit of a cultural architect in the dressing room, sort of the fun of the party almost. We saw him bringing out the beers after the Bournemouth game and kicking the balls on the roof and messing about. He's a big character, isn't he? And him and Gibson in particular were sort of singled out by Farker for the positivity they brought when they signed. And it seems to be a very popular guy in the camp. To then turn around and say, oh, thanks very much, we're promoted now, you can go, would not probably go down too well, I wouldn't have thought. So as we sit at the moment, I think, certainly if I was Hugill, I'd be saying, no, I'm happy here. I'll be fighting for my place. I'm one injury away from getting an opportunity in the Premier League. I'm, 29, I think, 28, 29. He's probably not going to get another Premier League opportunity. So unless they're planning to force him out of the door, which I do not get any suggestion that they are, I think it's more, you know, if a good opportunity came up for him that suited him and the club, then maybe they'd explore it because he knows that he's not ahead of Timu Pukki in the pecking order as things stand. But equally, Pukki is like Grant Hanley. We'll see what happens with Hanley's injury. We're waiting for an update on that side of things. They're probably going to have a bit of a belated start to pre-season. So there might be the opportunity for Eder and Hugill to lay down a marker. We don't know how Farke plans to use Rashica yet either, do we? That he obviously has quite a bit of experience as a striker. You might see him playing there a bit in pre-season while Pukki's out, or while Pukki's sort of being eased into things, I should say. He'll be interested to see what happens actually with Pukki, when he, after having the ankle injury and leading up to Finland and stuff, he probably will need a bit of a break because him and Hanley played a lot of football this season. So yeah, for me, that's probably one that we might end up revisiting during August. You know, if he finds a bit like Tim Closer did at the start of this season, that he's not really in Daniel Farke's thinking for those first few games and that Premier League opportunity isn't going to be there. And, you know, he had loans in the past and he spent the year with QPR, year with Middlesbrough on loan. If that sort of thing were to crop up again and he really thinks, now there's no point in me kicking my heels here, I want to play football, then it might happen. But equally, if you score, you come off the bench at the right time, you score a header at a corner and Norwich win a game, he's got lift off, isn't he? And to be fair to him, he had a pretty harsh season, didn't he, with the injuries, the way he's picked up like that shoulder injury at Middlesbrough, the way he picked that up was quite strange. And when he hurt his hamstring at Barnsley in the FA Cup, I think was the second one, wasn't it? So he had a bit of bad luck along the way. And generally, from what we saw, you know, he's a very different player from Pukki. Technically, he's not that kind of level, is he? But he is a hard worker. He is a bit of a battering ram. And as an impact player, you never know, he might be useful. But from what we've heard, it's more that Eder is ahead of him in the pecking order as things stand. And that really was where Eder had pretty much progressed to before he got his injury when he was away with Ireland and his red card and all that sort of stuff. So, just another department of the Norwich City squad, which is going to be really interesting to see develop. And that is probably a key thing to remember, that the transfer window closes after three league games and the League Cup second round game will have been played. So, yeah, just because it's that's the squad for kickoff against Liverpool doesn't mean that will be the squad at the end of August.
Yeah, absolutely spot on, I think, in terms of Jordan Hugill there. I think Mitchell on YouTube is suggesting that you look a bit like Eddie Hearn, I think, from his comments. I'm not sure if that's one you've had before, Dave.
Me? But,
yeah, well, I don't think he means me, so there you go.
Eddie Hearn, eh? Okay. I wish I had his money.
Is that a new one for you? Have you had Eddie Hearn before?
No, I used to get Paul McVeigh when I was younger, but I don't think I look remotely like Paul McVeigh now. no. As long as it's not James Corden. My sisters like to tell me I look like James Corden, but that's just winding me up, but I'm not having it at all.
There you go. Well, beyond that, why I think you mentioned there was it a glasses model or something that looked like me? I don't have too many, I don't think, which is
yeah. It was on the Benjamin Foundation website, I think, wasn't it? One of the Norfolk charities. I can't remember why I went on their website, but there was a model and it looked like a 14-year-old you.
Yeah, well, lucky them. That's all you can say to that, isn't it? I used to get Stephen Merchant when I was at school, but that was just because of tall and glasses. That was about it, really. Let's see. I think we've got Darren. I've just cut off his name here. Darren Taylor, who said Adam Armstrong link. Any more from that? Not that we're aware. I think that's probably one that's fairly unlikely at this stage anyway, just in terms of numbers and clubs interested. Maybe falls into kind of everything we've spoken about opportunities. And if certain stuff aligned, which is probably the case with I guess Philip Billing as well, you can talk about that with. If it all aligned, an opportunity sort of arose, then I think Norwich City would pursue it. But at the moment, nothing sort of new to report on that. Robert Andrick, he was the Union Berlin midfielder, wasn't he? So, nothing new on that front either. Let's see what else we have got in terms of the comments. Lots of people asking about Brandon Williams, Dave. I guess this kind of leans into what we spoke about Max earlier and his situation, because unless something happens with him, and certainly what Manchester United look like they're trying to do is convert Brandon Williams from a left back into a right back. He's right footed, so that makes a lot of sense for lots of reasons. Looked pretty good, I thought, when particularly in the Old Trafford game when Norwich played Manchester United a couple of years ago. Looked pretty impressive. Would be that kind of mix. But again, we're kind of into the element where Norwich can have two Premier League loans. If they want Billy Gilmore and they want Ollie Skip, then they can't have Brandon Williams. If they want Billy Gilmore and Brandon Williams, then they can't have Ollie Skip. So all of this stuff has to go in their thinking as well. But by all means, it does sound like a player that Norwich City would be interested in terms of the profile and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, there's Nico Williams, which is a similar case, isn't it? But it sounds like Liverpool are actually willing to sell him. So that's interesting. Wales international, we all know Stuart Webber as well. So he could be a name to remember if Max Aarons did end up going. But again, as we sort of said earlier with Bogle, if Max doesn't go, then it doesn't look like the fullbacks are going to change too much. I mean, initially we'd heard that Sam McCallum would be going back out on loan and that they want him at the top end of the Championship this year, really prove that, because he's still so young and they got him on a long contract and he's had a good start to his career, but stepped up from non-league, that he's a real project one for them. But he might end up getting opportunities in pre-season, and particularly if Byram's fitness doesn't work out as hoped, and might just be able to force his way into things. But yeah, it still feels like you've got to keep a close eye on what's going on with the fullbacks, because on the face of it looks short, doesn't it? But if things work out with Byram, they should be okay. They like Barley Mumber a lot as well, and he can play on the left. But if Yiannoulis were to get a big injury early doors, then you'd be a bit worried, wouldn't you? So you'd probably be, you're relying then on Mumba or Byron being able to play at left back. So, yeah, but as you framed it with the loans, I can't see them using one of them for a fullback probably.
Yeah, particularly if they're going to leave the door open for Skip. They certainly can't do that if they then go and sign Brandon Williams in a couple of weeks. So there's that element to it as well, I suppose. This is an interesting comment from Martin on Facebook. He said, with the signing of Angus Gunn and him obviously wanting first-team football eventually, how long do you now give Krul being Norwich's number one? Which is an interesting point. I think we've kind of spoken about this in terms of mid- to long-term planning and how several things work out. I mean, Krul's 33 now. We've spoken about this a lot. Obviously his career ambitions may differ if Norwich City end up getting relegation again. So there are several strands to this debate, I think, a little bit. But certainly for now, it seems like it will be Tim Krul as number one with Angus as number two. I mean, you speak about pre-season, given that Krul's currently away with the Netherlands in the Euros, and will need a holiday, similar to I guess Pukki and Hanley, there will be an opportunity for Gunn to kind of stake his claim, you'd imagine, particularly at the start of pre-season.
Yeah, I'd have thought with Krull and Poeheta, they probably will, they will go away on a holiday, won't they? They'll have at least 2 weeks, but I wouldn't have thought too much more than that, because A, the Premier League, there aren't as many games anyway, are there? It's not going to be anywhere near as frantic as last season was. But B, they, although you do have to do a lot of work if you're in the squad, you're still doing all the training and the warming up and things like that. They haven't actually been playing games at the Euros, really, have they? I know Poeheta came on the other night and didn't really cover himself in glory for Sweden's winner. It looks like he's got a bit of criticism in Poland, actually, for sort of his lack of defensive tracking for what was the crucial goal, although the game was pretty much gone by that point. But yeah, so we'll see how that goes. But I was just reminding myself, Tim Krul, of course, did sign a new contract at Christmas. So he's under contract till 2024, but he's 33, isn't he? So it's kind of, I would imagine at this stage, it's whether next summer Tim is then thinking, either way, you know, if Norwich go back down, yeah, I think we can probably all see the plan, can't we? That Angst becomes number one. Tim gets if there are suitors to get a move which keeps him in the Premier League, maybe not necessarily as a number one, but he could even go to one of the big boys, couldn't he? He could go to a Man United or a Chelsea and be their sort of high profile number two, who play some cup games and
return to Newcastle, couldn't he?
Could return, yeah. It's very possible. He's a bit of a hero up there, isn't he? And had a really, really good spell with them. So, but if Norwich were to stay up, then it would probably need a better deal. There would be a big payday potentially in there as well. When you step up to be one of those high profile number twos at one of the big boys, you can be on some real good money, can't you? And as ever with a keeper, you'd be one injury or whatever away from getting opportunities in the Champions League, Europa League, whatever. So, I think the important thing for here and now this season is that everybody pretty much is in agreement that Tim Krul is a good number one for Norwich in the Premier League. He was player of the season the last time, although they went down, and there's not really any debate over that. He is Daniel Farke's man, isn't he? And hopefully he can teach Angus Gunn a lot. But if things were to go wrong, we obviously hope they don't. Tim has had a serious knee injury, career-threatening injury in the past. You have got to have a good number two or good competition at the least. And as Angus has shown with his spell at Southampton and watching your chat with the chap from Hampshire Live that's on our YouTube channel as well, Alex McCarthy took advantage of Angus Gunn, I suppose, dropping form after the 9-0 against Leicester. And then subsequently, McCarthy's lost his place to Fraser Forster after they lost 9-0 to Manchester United in a slightly different scenario. So, you know, if Tim were to have a downturn in form, as we saw with John Ruddy, you know, Declan Rudd and Mark Bunn both came in for John Ruddy at one point, didn't they? You've got to have a good option. And that's what Ralph Fairman offered in the last Premier League season. And that is what Angus Gunn offers, and it suits Norwich nicely. It's all just knitted together at the right time, isn't it? It suits Angus, gives him some stability at a good time in his life, long-term prospects as well, and then it gives that little bit of wriggle room for next summer for if they want to sort of evolve that goalkeeper situation, or if Tim has got his eye on a step up the ladder.
Yeah, worth mentioning as well, Archie Mayer today has been linked with Exeter and Rochdale. Obviously, was on loan at King's Lynn last season. The plan is to send him out on loan, isn't it? And if he can get an EFL loan, that would represent a step up. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how they develop. Dan Barden was linked with Livingston previously. So lots of sort of moving stuff in the goalkeeping department. But it looks like Krul, Gunn and McGovern is going to be the three now. Obviously, Oyan Nyland's departure was confirmed as well by the club earlier this week. Last 5 minutes or so. So any more questions, do get them in and we'll try to get through them fairly quickly. A couple here. We'll start with Flynn Clark, which has come from James Hilton on Facebook. He's just said, thoughts on Flynn Clark. Will he be given a chance next season? He's been announced like a player that will play. Certainly from what we understand, I think the club even included this in their announcement when they released the signing. He is going to form part of their development squad. I would imagine there's probably a loan route for him as well, but he's 18 years old. He's got time on his side. I don't think it's anything that needs to be rushed. As we know, Norwich have pathways for players. So, certainly not initially. Flynn Clark is not going to be a name that you're familiar with in terms of first team. But, the fact he's 18 and playing for the 23s is probably a good sign. And then Olive Middleton has said, often mentioned that Norwich have the smallest budget in the Premier League. How do Brentford compare financially? I mean, with Brentford, we see this. It's a very... I mean, people talk about clever recruitment and they tend to put Norwich and Brentford together, but actually the respective approaches of the two clubs are very different. And Brentford are owned by Matthew Benham, aren't they, who owns an analytics company. They tend to recruit all their players based on purely metrics and data and finance and looking for kind of value based on statistics like expected goals. There are others as well. So that's the way they recruit. And we've seen them, I suppose, adopt similarly sort of tactics to Norwich, where they get a player to a certain level. Neil Morpay, going back even further, Scott Hogan, most recently sort of Ollie Watkins, Benarama as well. They improve players to a level and then sell them for value. So it is a club that has sold, similarly to Norwich, their assets maybe at different times, but in terms of resource, they probably have a bit more maybe than I'd say Norwich have in terms of owner-backed cash. Whether they generate the same amount of revenue is a bit different, but two quite contrasting clubs. Dave, how do you think Brentford will look to approach the Premier League in terms of financially, I suppose? Do you think they will be one that maybe, as we've seen promoted clubs do in the past, throw money at it, or do you think they will look to try and tap into what they've done so far, which is look for value and look for players, I guess, similarly to Norwich? It's just different approaches to how they do it. Players that will maybe perform in the Premier League that may be underappreciated in the market elsewhere.
Yeah, he's a pretty wealthy guy. There's an interesting backstory, isn't there, between him and Tony Bloom, the Brighton owner, who is a billionaire. And they both sort of came up in sport gambling analytics, didn't they? I thought I was getting an important message then, but not. I don't think they'll be chucking money at it because that is an incredibly well-run club, Brentford, isn't it? As you say, that he's going to want players in the same way that Stuart Webber has got his eyes on potentially there being resale value there, because it's all one big long process. If it all comes off and you manage to nail it, then you slowly build your way up the Premier League and get into European contention eventually by signing the right players, selling them for big profits and continuing the process, don't you? But as we all know, football's not as straightforward as that. And you need continuity and consistency and stuff for things like that. But he's got a bit of a network of clubs as well behind Brentford, isn't he? So he's somebody that has got a lot of money, but who demands that the club washes its own face, essentially. And they don't have to be quite as financially self-sustainable as Norwich do, but he does want them to be run sensibly. He's not someone who's putting in 50 million a season, I don't think. They're not going to go and spend 150 million this summer like Fulham or Villa did, because they've got billionaire owners who were just chucking money at it. No, Brentford's a much more sensible club, and this is their first Premier League season. I think their first top flight season for a long, long time. Isn't it 60 years or something like that? And I think that was only a brief spell in the top flight a long time ago. So they've got that lovely new stadium. I think it's really interesting to see how they do, but where they are in the big scale of things at the moment, I think they will realise that a yo-yo season is probably the most likely thing to benefit them in the long term and keeping things nice and steady. And as Norwich and Burnley and Bournemouth and whatever tried to do in the past.
Yeah, a well-run club, as people are pointing out. I think that just about wraps it up for this week. I think we've covered everything there is to cover. Been a busy week, as you can imagine. Pinkin.com, of course, the place to go for more in terms of transfers. Anything that we hear will be on there. And, of course, plenty more video content to come your way as well. Until then, we'll see you next Friday. Same time, same place. Thank you all very much for joining us. And we'll see you again soon.